each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Go ahead. And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. And I am joined today by my new colleague here on Winds of Change, Loretta Freilich. Loretta, thank you again for being here.
It's my privilege, Mary. Thank you for having me.
Always a joy to be here. And listeners, we had a bit of an adventure getting here today, Loretta and I, and there's a lot of bad accidents and traffic and other things, but the Lord worked it all out for us and got us here in the nick of time. So, and it's also that's the start of a new month. We're in February now, and as I always like to say, February is the longest, shortest month of the year if you live in Chicago. It's like you live in the black and white world of Oz before Kansas, before Dorothy gets to Oz. That's what it feels like. And that on top of the cold and stuff. So my car didn't start this morning, listeners, and so my dear friend Loretta was kind enough to pick me up this morning to get me down to be with all of you. So in addition to being the longest, shortest month of the year, February is also Black History Month. And we are so privileged to be joined today by newspaper editor and author Joyce DiRiga, who is going to be speaking to us about a Black Catholic priest on his way to canonization, the Venerable Augustus Tolton. Joyce is the author of the eponymous book, Augustus Tolton, The Church in the Time of, The Church is the True Liberator, Augustus Tolton. Joyce DiRiga, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
And my pleasure, Mary. Thank you for having me.
Oh, my goodness. What a privilege it is for us. Black History Month, such an important saint, but not or soon to be saint. We'll speak of that positively because I do believe he is with the Lord now in a formal way. But I'm always so proud when I'm able to talk about Augustus Tolton because he was lived and worked in Chicago, and so Chicago can claim him. Other than Mother Cabrini, I'm not sure that we have any other formally declared saints who were from this area. But Joyce, tell us a little bit about how you became interested in he's venerable now, correct?
He is venerable, yes.
Yeah. So how did you become interested in the cause of Venerable Augustus Tolton? And tell us a little bit how the process is going.
Well, as you know, he was the first black priest ordained for the United States. We say identified because there were three others that were biracial that didn't identify with their race. But I became involved because when I work, I'm the editor of the Chicago Catholic, the newspaper for the Archdiocese, and then Cardinal George announced the cause opening. And I had read a book about Father Tolton's life before coming to Chicago, and when we got the news, you know, I love all things saints and this kind of stuff. So it's just been, I've had a front row seat to everything Father Tolton since that time. And, you know, it's been, you know, tremendous. We were even there when they exhumed his body. That was one of the most beautiful, actually, it's a very prayerful process.
Right.
So,
is that part of the process that introduces the cause? Why don't you walk us through that, maybe take listeners back to when Cardinal George decided that he wanted to open this cause to put the Venerable Augustus on the road to sainthood.
So it was the year for priests in, he announced it in 2010 for the year for priests, but it was formally opened in February of 2011.
Okay.
And so that involves, there's a bunch of different committees. There's a historical committee, there's a canonical committee. You know, they start to collect data, you know, on where he lived, the proof of the holiness of his life, proof that he did live. And then they put it all together in this huge document, which is called the Positio, which is like, you know, a dissertation on
which
steroids.
Which means, right. The position from the Latin. So just kind of a case statement, if you will.
Yeah. And then they go, you know, that gets sent off to Rome and gets translated and all that kind of stuff. And then as part of the process, just moving along, they have to verify the remains. Right. And they have done it in the past because of like grave robberies and things like of that nature. I mean, we're talking centuries ago,
right.
But now they do it to.
There aren't many grave robbers around these days that I know of. Yeah.
And they do it to verify that this is him and that this is where he's buried. And then they actually reburied him and went through kind of the funeral.
At which cemetery is he?
He's at St. Peter's Cemetery in Quincy, which is a teeny tiny little cemetery.
Right, where he was from, right? Or more or less, right? Because he was actually born in a slave-holding state.
And Joyce, you share in your book, and you chronicled in the Chicago Catholic how his body was exhumed and how the participants all take an oath. And what I loved learning was how important the church believes the remains of this holy man are, and that they dress him in the white garment that priests wear when they complete the process.
Yeah, I get goosebumps thinking about it. I mean, as they were unearthing him, literally,
yes.
You know, and then
yes.
It was the forensic anthropologist, maybe, but anyway, they reassembled the bones, and then mm-hmm. they could verify that it was a man of that age. And then, yes, Bishop Perry had gotten the priest garments from what that would have been like around that time,
mm-hmm.
kind of an example. And then they just vested him again, and they put him in a pall, and the cemetery workers carried the pall over to a new casket, and they sealed the casket, and they reinterred. And it was, they take an oath that they're going to do this faithfully, and, you know, it was beautiful. When they were exhuming it, Bishop Thomas Rapacki in Springfield, which is where the Diocese of Quincy is located, he started praying the rosary, you know,
mm-hmm.
and then there's all these people. It was an amazing, and then to know it was him, like, that's him.
Now, tell us how you hold a special place in the Archdiocese in terms of Father Augustus Tolton, correct?
Well, I mean, I'm one of the ones that Bishop Perry, Bishop Perry's the postulator of the cause. He's one mm-hmm. of, Bishop Joseph Perry is one of our auxiliaries. And I'm one of the few people he lets, like, formally talk about Father Tolton. And that's because of a book that I wrote and that he did a lot to help me with. But, yeah, I mean, before the pandemic, I like to go to visit parishes and kind of give presentations because we have all these photos. Our photographer and I have been all these places that are historical sites. And, you know, it's just kind of a way we try and bring, you know, Tolton to people. Like Mary, you were saying, he's from here, you know?
Right.
It's totally changed my perspective on Chicago. Like when Frank Lloyd Wright was building his studio out in Oak Park that people all over the world come to visit,
mm-hmm.
Father Tolton's ministering in Bonzo.
Right.
Like two completely different worlds, right?
Right.
Right.
And so.
And St. Monica's Catholic Church at the time was the church he built, correct?
Yeah, it never got completely finished, but
mm-hmm.
yes, he started building St. Monica's Church, St. Monica named after St. Augustine's mother. And, you know, St. Augustine was from Africa, yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, and he has a connection with another saint, St. Catherine Drexel.
Right.
He was begging for his people, and he would write St. Catherine Drexel and ask her to help support the Black community here in Chicago. And she did. So
she did.
We have a connection here in Chicago to another saint. St. Right. Catherine Drexel.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And she, you know, she was giving money to Black and Indian missions around the country at the time. And mm-hmm. he got some. And then she eventually sent some of her sisters to come work at the school. That was kind of after he died, though. But
mm-hmm. Joyce, did you, was there anything? Now, I know you, you would have simply because of your role as the editor of the Chicago Catholic and your, you know, being assisting Bishop Perry with promoting this cause and this process. Was there anything even after, you know, I imagine you had already amassed a certain amount of knowledge and understanding about Venerable Augustus. Was there anything you found in the research for your book that, like, just completely surprised you?
Yeah, two things. One was why he was sent here, because why he was sent back to the United States. You know, he went to Rome to be ordained because no seminary here would ordain him. And, you know, there was, I had heard different theories before, and I didn't read all the canonization documents close up. But what exactly, he was sent back specifically to open the minds and the hearts of the Catholic bishops in the United States, because the Vatican had been, you know, we were a evangelization territory at the time, and the Vatican had them hold two councils, the bishops here, trying to get them to, as, to do other things, but to establish ministries to Black folks in the United States, because it was right after the Civil War, and they wouldn't do it. They couldn't agree. They wouldn't do it. And the cardinal who was over the Congregation for the Evangelization of the People, that was something, Propagation of the Faith before that, but he was also in charge of the seminary where Father Tolton was. And before, right after, like the night before he was ordained, they said, you know what, you're not going to Africa, you're going back to the United States. And there's a quote where this cardinal said, you know, America is supposed to be such a progressive place. Well, we'll see how progressive they are. They haven't seen a Black priest before, they're going to see one now.
Wow.
And so he was sent back essentially as a sacrificial lamb, you know.
Mm. And but ordained, so I'm trying to think, was he a priest then of the Archdiocese of Chicago technically?
No. Well, he was ordained through Urban College. So they have kind of like an order, but what he didn't understand either until later was that he was, wherever they sent him, he was, had to answer to that bishop. He didn't need permission to leave from the Urban College in Rome. He needed permission of that local bishop, which was why he ended up in Quincy way too long.
Right.
But so he was, he would have become like what we would call them, like incarnated.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. 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 Right.
Okay, now, Joyce, you said there were two things that surprised you.
So why Father Tolton was essentially run out of Quincy was because white people were going to the church. They were giving them money. The white pastors, there was a couple of reasons, but the main reason was the white pastors didn't like that. There were some very racist pastors. There were some good ones. But they said, you know, that money has to come to us. You know, they should be going to our churches. They shouldn't be going to your church. And then, so fast forward, Tolton dies, and St. Monica's, you know, goes through a series of things. Well, and I read this, the letter was published verbatim in the Chicago Catholic. It was the New World back then. Cardinal Mundelein, who I really, like, had put on a pedestal for his work fighting anti-Catholicism at the time,
mm-hmm.
he wrote a letter to the parishioners of St. Monica and said, no more whites can come there. It should only be Black people. And any money that they give has to go to the white churches, not to you. And I know that, you know, racism exists, but I really can't do anything about it. And we'll all be together one day in heaven. And I was like, are you kidding me?
Wow.
Wow.
And I mean, it was on the front page of the New World from back then. And then I had since found out there's a couple books on, you know, Catholic history in Chicago that caused like a national uproar. That he did that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And like you, I had a very favorable opinion of Cardinal Mundelein, particularly, you know, his disdain for the Nazis and everything else. He seemed to be a very principled man. So that actually really shocks me, you know, to learn that. But was it more, do you think that the impetus of this was it monetary? That's what it's sounding like to me. Like this was like a monetary...
based on the letter, that's what it sounded like to me. He also said, he's like, you've reached enough, like, not equal status, but, you know, you've gotten enough work that you don't need to be supported by the white congregation anymore. Meanwhile, they're working, like, not good jobs, you know. And
Of course not. Yeah, there would have been a lot of menial labor and the stockyards and all of those awful jobs that, you know, people of color were pretty much forced into for lack of other options in those days. But, you know, and it's interesting because the Brownsville community has really undergone this renaissance, hasn't it? I mean, that's the very kind of cool and hip place to be now. I mean, it was Bucktown, then Pilsen, and now, Brownsville. Tell us a little bit about what Brownsville would have been like in the days that he was pastor at St. Monica's.
Well, in my understanding, very poor, very unsanitary health conditions. People were living real close to each other. But, you know, there was also, like, you know, they also had their cultural stuff where they were, you know, with the music and with all
kinds of different
things.
Right. It was a big jazz. Even then, it was like the birth of jazz in Chicago was in Brownsville.
Yeah.
But it was before, I think, Chicago had reworked its housing code, so a lot of the houses were built below ground, which was a terrible health and safety hazard for a lot of because of waste accumulating in places. And now, you know, the building code in Chicago doesn't allow you to have these sub homes that would have, you know, these garden apartments that would have existed in two flats and three flats if those existed back in the day. But, it's just his whole even getting here, you know, is, I feel a little bit jumping ahead. Tell us about how, because he was born in Missouri, was he not?
Yeah. And then about 2 years before the end of the Civil War, his mom took him and his brother and sister and fled. They're still researching this stuff. They don't know if she fled with other family members or if it was just the three of them Well, I mean, we visited there with Cardinal George, actually. We visited the plantation, and they would have been on foot 20 miles through, like, just imagine, like, any prairie forest.
Right.
You know, and they're being hunted, because there's proof that the slave owner at the time was paid somebody to hunt for them. And then they get to the Mississippi River. They have to cross the Mississippi River, which is being guarded by soldiers on both sides of the war. And then she has to, you know, walk them another 20 miles to Quincy, which was, was open to former slaves at that point, but not as, I mean, but being open is not being.
Yeah.
That
I mean,
open.
Did they employ that, use the Underground Railroad? Was that the.
We don't know that, but I imagine some of that, but they weren't that far from, I mean, 40 miles, my understanding is they just went and they hid and then they, you know, but there was the Underground Railroad in Quincy.
Right. And then I just actually learned over the weekend, Wheaton College was a stop on the Underground Railroad.
Okay.
Yeah. So, well, Joyce, we're going to go to our first break. I hope you can stay with Loretta and I for the next half of the conversation. There's so much to talk about with Venerable Augustus Tolton, and we're really grateful that you're here. So listeners, please do stay tuned. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This Thursday, Father Anthony invites members of the 6th grade class of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, along with their teacher, Miss O'Reilly, to Winds of Change. Join us this Thursday at noon on AM 750 WNDZ.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Welcome back. I'm Loretta Freilich on listener-supported Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ, with Mary Fiorito and our guest, Joyce DeRiga, talking about her book, Augustus Tolton. And Joyce, one of the things that I found so interesting in your book is you recount other, you indicate that Augustus Tolton is the first identified Black priest, and yet there were others. Can you tell us about the Healys?
Yeah, that was something I didn't know about. You know, my history isn't always the greatest, but there were three brothers who were born to a slave. Plantation owner who had a monogamous relationship with one of his slaves, and through a series of events, he got them moved because he knew that being biracial, they were never going to be
accepted in Georgia.
Yeah, so they ended up going up to school in New York, and then through a series of events, they get into Catholic University, they convert, and they become priests. One of them was actually a former president of Georgetown University, and he was there when they actually had slaves. But they went through like some of his stuff, but he never really talked about it. And that one became a bishop,
but, right? Of Portland, Maine.
Yeah, and it was really interesting to me because I had some like resentment. I'm like, why wouldn't they stand up? You know, the Black Catholic Congress had started at that time, and they kept asking them to come, and they would have known of Father Tolton. He would have known of them. You know, but when I've given talks and people of color have shared, they said they were passing. And I'm like, what's that mean? And they said, it's a common thing that they were passing for white because mm-hmm. they were light-skinned enough. Well, two of them. The third one that stayed back in Boston and became like chancellor and a whole bunch of other stuff had more African features. And they actually wanted him to be the first rector of North American College. But in the letters, you'll see that the bishops are saying, I just don't think that the students would accept his features. You know, like, mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess, so I've had to kind of that was a good experience for me because they were just doing what they could at the time. I mean, life was better as a white person than as a Black person, but.
And they also, you indicate in your book how well-educated they were, and yet that education did not spill over into creating a better world that Father Tolton could have worked into. You know, the reason you state in your book, the reason that he goes to Rome is because no seminary will accept him in the United States.
Right. And they didn't. I mean, even the brother who was the Portland bishop, he was buried in, like, the Irish part of the cemetery. I mean, they really just eschewed that part of their heritage. And it's not known that they even kind of connected with their mother after mm-hmm. they left, you know, and... Yeah, it's something I didn't understand and probably don't because I'm not them, but yeah, it was fascinating to me because they're technically one of the first sets of Black priests.
Right. And now you also said that in your book, you wrote about how Father Tolton went to Rome, and tell us what he was hoping would happen for him when he was ordained a priest and graduated from the seminary.
Well, he thought he was going to go and minister to people, you know, folks in Africa, you know. But I imagine, like, can you imagine, though, like, how scared he must have been? Like, he left his family back in Quincy, not knowing if he's ever going to see his mom again and any of that. And then he's going to, you go to Rome, and then you're going to be sent to a club. And he's probably had a ton of enthusiasm, you know, to go and minister to the folks in Africa and then, you know, get told last minute that this is, you know, nope. You're going back to the racist town that you grew up in. I can't imagine what he was going through.
Yeah, Joyce, did you find anything in terms of a diary or writings? Do we have an idea of how the way in which he would have dealt with this type of treatment, both I don't even mean just practically, but in his prayer life and how it shaped his own spirituality.
There isn't stuff on that, no. There's letters. I mean, he wrote mm-hmm. letters to different folks and for appeal. And he was, you know, he would sometimes express his frustration. And then, like, once he kind of lost his temper when in a newspaper article in Quincy when he had come back. He was in Chicago at the time, and he came back for the funeral of his mentor. And they were told that there was no room at the inn, essentially. And then he kind of expressed his upset in the newspaper. But for the most part, he didn't complain. But there's not much about his prayer life, you know, not personal stuff that he wrote, not that we've found.
And he also had another friend in another prominent man, Daniel Rudd.
Yes. And yeah, Daniel, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, he was founder of the national black newspaper, the American Catholic Tribune.
Right. And he's also one of the founders of the Black Catholic Congress, which still goes on today.
And, wow.
Yeah. And the Black Catholic Tribune, you know, chronicled everything Father Tolton did because it was a national newspaper and, mm-hmm. you know, he was the first black priest. And so there's archives of that actually in Notre Dame and some other places that that you can read. But he was a leader among the black community in the United States and really fought for them to be considered, you know, equal and not like human beings, right?
Right.
I mean, we weren't treating them like that.
And Rudd, you also write in your book, was also a journalist and an activist. So did you find any similarities with both yourself and Mr. Rudd?
Yeah, thank you. I haven't done anything that he's to the point that he's done. But yeah, being able to use the printed word, the power of the printed word to advocate for people and the power of that. You know, and there was I'm a member of what's called the Catholic Press Association, and there was a version of that back then, and he was a member. And I had never known that, you know, until I did the research on this book. And they were just tremendous, tremendous men that came together. And kind of to your point, Mary, about his spirituality, the subhead for the book is the Church's True Liberator, because that,
right.
That came through in tons of his talks. He was convinced that for freed blacks, that the Catholic Church was the only option. Because if you look down the history of the church, not at its people, but at the history of the church, popes had always talked about against slavery, and the theology is all about the inclusion of everybody. And he really took that to heart. And he would have seen that firsthand in Rome, because there wasn't racism like there is.
They've been
trading with Africa, right, for years.
Yes, of course.
And he would have seen how, you know, that whole people of God idea, and he preached about it all the time. And, you know, and it's just tremendous. And as Bishop Perry says, you know, he could have become bitter. There's a couple priests who left, white priests who were working on for the Josephites, who were really active in trying to, you know, get to minister to the black folks in the United States. And one of them became so disenchanted that he left the priesthood and the church. I mean, Tolton didn't do any of that. He just spent hours in the confessional. He would go and minister to people in Bronzeville who weren't Catholic. It didn't matter who they were. You know, he welcomed everybody, men, women, people of all races, you know. He believed it. And I think that message is still true now.
Yeah, that had to be very shocking coming from, you know, a very sort of welcoming culture that a place like Rome would have been. And of course, Rome being so far south in Italy, you know, and again, as you say, they had been traveling or trading with places like India and with Africa and with, you know, other countries where there would have been, you know, people of color. And so these kinds of, first of all, you know, segregation laws, for example, probably wouldn't have existed in the same way. I don't know specifically what the Italian government at that time did, but to be able to move so freely and then to come here and to face, you know, restrictions, I mean, on your movement, on where you could shop, on where you
exactly.
can preach. And that had to be, you talk about going to a mission culture. I mean, I love that one part of the story, and I know you opened our conversation by mentioning that, but, you know, it really is very, I don't think people understand Even though I know we have a good grasp now on the way in which race has affected, you know, the development of our own country, but the shock, the culture shock that must have been for him.
Right, to come back. And I think so, you know, while he might have been excited to come back to his hometown, he was probably gone with filled with dread and maybe some sadness, you know.
Tell me about his mother. Did his mother, did she precede him in death, or was she still alive at the time he died?
No, she's buried in Chicago. You can go down, I go visit her.
What was her name, Joyce?
Martha.
Martha. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, I think behind every good priest is a praying mom,
right.
Or a praying grandmother most of the time. And do we know anything about his father?
Well, no. I mean, there's a couple theories on it. So Martha Tolton, there's not much. I only found in the Black Catholic Tribune one mention of her, or two mentions. One, she was not feeling well, but then she was on the mend. And then the other one was how she had interceded in Quincy. They had taken on a girl who they were just kind of forming her in the faith, and she was Black, and the aunt was Baptist. Her parents were gone, and the girl really wanted to be baptized and all this stuff. The aunt locked her in a room, didn't want it, all kinds of stuff, and she ended up being baptized, and Martha was her baptismal mother. And when all this stuff just escalated and her aunt wouldn't let her go to church, Martha steps in and says, you know what, I'm her baptismal mother. She can come and live with us, and they took her in, and they ended up getting her into a convent. So those are the two stories that I've read about her. She wasn't literate, and she didn't do any interviews that we know of.
I see.
But she went with him everywhere. I mean, she was kind of like his sacristan, but also like, you know, his associate pastor in some ways. You know what I mean?
Wow. No, but, sure. No, that's really interesting. And, you know, you hear it now that Venerable Tolton has become more of a nationally known, you know, Black Catholic on his way to sainthood. You hear a little bit more about those kind of homey details about his mom and the things, you know, I think... that's really, Joyce, where the your book is such a gift, because it has all of those kind of like inside dishy stories that we Chicago ones like to tell about each other. But Joyce, are you able to stay with us for another few minutes?
Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
Super. We're going to go to our next break. And when we come back, listeners, we'll be again rejoined by Joyce Dariga, the editor of the Chicago Catholic and author of the book on Augustus Tolton, now Venerable Augustus Tolton. This is Mary Fiorito along with Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in today for Father Anthony. Here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's good news about a great school with in-person instruction for your child. Father Anthony is asking you to send your children to St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy for in-person instruction. Excellence in educating the mind, heart, soul, and spirit of each student. Cost should not be an obstacle to enrolling your child at St. Stan's Academy. We have scholarships and financial aid available to fit all budgets. Everyone who wants to give their child a Catholic education can do so at St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. Faith, virtue, honor. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is an elementary school offering grades pre-kindergarten to eighth grade and is located minutes from downtown Chicago. Call the school office at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or visit sdstanschicago.org for St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Hi,
how long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, St. Stanislaus Kostka Church. Is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hi, welcome back. It's Loretta Freilich and Mary Fiorito with our guest, Joyce DeRiga, talking about her fabulous book, Augustus Tolton, as we celebrate Black History Month. Joyce, I wanted to ask you, before we go any further, if somebody wanted to get a copy of this wonderful book, where would they go?
They can go to, it's on Amazon, but they can also go to LIT Press, PRESS.org. Liturgical Press is who publish it. This book is part of a series that they do called People of God, and they do it on, like they did one on Cardinal Burney. I did a different one on Sister Helen Prejean. So there's like little shorter books that people, you know, can be introduced to, like Dorothy Day, that kind of stuff. But sure. LitPress.org.
And can you tell us, how did Father Tolton die?
Well, pretty much he worked himself to death. We don't have his death certificate because there was a fire. Not the fire, but a fire in the morgue in Cook County. So we don't have his death certificate. But they believed it was so. But what precipitated it was there was a heat wave. He had gone out to near Kankakee to a priest retreat, and he came back on the train. And at the time, if for folks in Chicago, there's the Cardinal Meyer Center, which is right down 35th and Lake Park, and which is, there's pastoral offices of the Archdiocese. There used to be a train station right there. And he got off there, and he started walking to his house and down there, and he collapsed and with heat exhaustion. And then they got him to nearby Mercy Hospital, and then he died the next day or overnight. But he had been, like, I found some stuff in the New World from back then. He had to take some time off more frequently because his health was bad. But if you think about it, he spent a lot of time with people. I mean, there's no health care, you know, in impoverished areas. And he spent a lot of time. There's all this evidence of it was everybody else before him. So he just ministered tirelessly. So, I mean, unofficially, we think it was just he just worked himself to death. But there was a heat wave that precipitated things.
Now, isn't a miracle required for canonization?
Yes.
And what miracle, if you're aware, is attributed to Augustus Tolton?
Well, there's I don't have the specific details on the recent ones. Unfortunately, I got to double check with Bishop Perry. I know that two were sent to Rome and one is still there. I think it has to do with a woman on the south side prayed to him.
But isn't there a seminarian that experienced?
Yeah, I don't think that's the one that got accepted by Rome, though.
Okay.
Right. So you mean to become venerable, there has to be one miracle in order for the venerable status to be attached, or just the sanctity of life and witness? Is that's enough to suffice?
No, just the sanctity of life and witness. So there's a sanctity of life and witness, and then another Vatican committee meets to say, okay, all that stuff is, and then, you know, we agree with all this stuff, and that's when he becomes venerable. To become blessed, he needs a miracle,
okay.
And he needs another one for canonization.
Right.
But, I mean, the Pope could step in and say, you know, as he's done with others.
Right.
You know,
with John Paul II, for example. You know, the rules can be amended, you know, for particularly exemplary people who had these lives of heroic virtue. But, you know, it was interesting, Joyce. I don't know if you heard about it, but there was a family from near the Quincy area where he would have been from, actually a Caucasian family whose, very tragically, their three-year-old was found at the bottom of a pool and had, you know, had slipped into it when the other kids in the family weren't watching. And so the family had asked nationwide for everyone to pray to Augustus Tolton for the miracle for this little boy. And he had this sort of remarkable beginnings of a recovery, but then, as often the cases with toddler drowning deaths, you know, the pressure on his brainstem was too much and he did pass away, but his, you know, his organs, his father wrote this really beautiful, tribute saying, you know, even though, you know, Venerable, Tolton didn't intercede for the miracle we had hoped for, you know, their little boy's heart. And I believe his name was, he's either Augustine Ambrose or Ambrose Augustine, one of the two, but he had Augustine's one of his two names, but like his heart is beating in the body of a 4-year-old girl now. And it's the father, and the courage it must've taken, but the father said, I can't, I'm crying as I write this, but my son's heart is beating in the heart of another little girl who's alive now because of my son, and that in itself of a miracle. I know that wouldn't, that's not the kind that, like, qualifies, you know, for, it has to, you know, those the cures. Rome is very, very, very careful when they look at these. Yeah. They have to be complete, instantaneous, inexplicable medical miracles in order for them to really count. I mean, it's, I remember, you know, after Cardinal Bernardine died, one of my jobs was sort of accumulating answers to prayers that people would write in. And, you know, some, God bless him, some 16-year-old wrote in and said, you know, he'd passed his driver's test. So either it's like, you must be a really bad driver if you think that this counts as a miracle. That makes me a little nervous. But they can, and that's not to, I mean, God bless him. And,
yes,
you know what, that's a beautiful faith to have in a young person.
Yes, that he
age.
Gave to God the desire for a drive. And
right.
Look at God answered his prayer.
To the intercession of Cardinal Bernardine. So,
that is a sign of God moving
yeah,
in his
that,
life.
Correct. That's not going to work in Rome, though. So, yeah, so that kind of stalled out. But it's interesting, you know, it's sometimes like you have all that work that's done, and then it's, and it can sometimes sit for a long time, you
yes.
know.
Yeah.
But then, in the meantime, just what can you tell us about sort of what we would call the cult of Venerable? And that doesn't, not cult in the negative way. I was just saying
right.
to somebody the other day how a lot of people have lost their Catholic vocabularies, and that when the church talks about, you know, like, for example, the cult of Solanus Casey, it means just a group of people who would have a devotion to him, an interest in him spreads. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, is there sort of a... Is there a, you know, an Augustus Tolton Guild or?
There is. It's the Tolton Ambassadors, of which
oh,
now
interesting.
I'm one. Yeah, they're like representatives in different dioceses. We haven't really gotten to meet during the pandemic, and the whole idea is you're supposed to promote his cause among the, Detroit has an active one, Atlanta has an active one. There's a small group at Holy Name that meets around Father Tolton. I do think the more, and it might just be because I'm involved in it, but I do think that more people are getting to know him of all races because
mm-hmm,
it keeps,
right.
you know, it keeps coming up. And then a couple years, like 2 years ago, Xavier University in New Orleans opened up a center to promote causes of sainthood for Black Catholics. So there's like Sister Thea Bowman and others who are, there's like five or six folks who are involved, their causes are involved in that. So I think mm-hmm. there is a growing awareness. I'm hoping that with all of this, you know, I did a story when all this stuff kind of escalated in the summer with George Floyd about, you know, I just kept thinking, what would Father Tolton say? So I reached out to Bishop Perry and then interviewed two Black Catholic colleagues about what he would say about
mm-hmm.
this. And essentially, like, he would be extremely disappointed, you know,
mm-hmm.
because what he was working for is still, you know, because we associate with...
Disappointed in what, with the reaction to it, or disappointed that it happened at all, or...
Disappointed that it happened at all, and disappointed at the state and the church in the United States that's not more welcoming
yeah.
to... Yeah. And, you know, like Bishop Perry talked about, and I never thought about it before, we talk about this a lot in Chicago, about ethnic parishes, or the Black parishes, or the
right.
Latino parish. And he's like, we shouldn't be doing that. There's no Black parish. There's a...
Right.
parish, and you know we shouldn't, and so but I do, yeah, I do think it's growing, you know, more stuff is coming out, there's a play, there's, you know, some documentaries, there's some, so I'm hopeful. Yeah.
Now, Joyce, can I ask you, does Bishop Augustus Tolton, does he have like a feast day that people can pray for his intercession? Or
not yet. I think not until he becomes blessed does he get all that good stuff.
Like, okay.
We can't build a shrine until he becomes blessed, you know. I don't understand.
The bling and the goodie bag come after your...
Yeah. We weren't allowed to take any relics from the gravesite. I wish I would have gotten some dirt, but... You know,
no,
yeah,
but yeah,
we don't.
Well,
you took an oath, Joyce. We don't want you getting in any trouble at the gravesite.
No, speaking.
This
of,
is your lawyer speaking,
yeah, well,
Joyce.
No. Speaking of, no, but listen. Speaking of dirt, and Joyce, you may know. I don't mean dirt in terms of gossip. I mean dirt in terms of actual dirt. But Cardinal George may have told you this story. He told it to me once. I've never forgotten it. That the religious order to which he belonged, the Oblates of Mary Immaculate, you know, initially sent, they were based in France, their French order, and sent a number of their missionaries to Alaska, of all places. I don't know, the bishop there must have invited them to come and work among the people there. And they were having like zero success, like nothing was going right. They were abysmal failures. And they went back, must have been like for a month during the summer to go back to their to the community house just for rest and to, you know, check in with their superiors. And they went to the grave of St. Thérèse of Lisieux, who is the patron saint of missionaries. And they got a couple of bags of dirt, or, you know, not big bags, but, you know, they got dirt. And when they got back to their mission sites, they sprinkled it all around, the structure that they used as a church and the structure that they used as a little school. And all of a sudden, conversions began to happen by the thousands.
Glory to God.
So I've always remembered that little dirt story. So if you can get dirt from someone's grave, I did that for a person who was praying to Cardinal George, actually, for their intercession. And, you know, knelt down to it next to a woman who was looking at me strangely as I was scooping dirt into a Ziploc baggie. But, you know, I figured, well, a little humiliation won't hurt me either while I'm doing this.
Yeah.
So, so there is something about the grave sites of where holy and people, you know, particularly if there aren't, you know, we don't chop up saints' bodies anymore and pass them around, you know, like we used to back in the good old days. when we chopped up people. But you know, to have a clipping of someone's hair or to have, you know, again, just simply dirt for dirt. But you don't really even need those things. But I do think in some cases that's extra proof of the person did intercede with the Lord for healing in particular. You know, those are just, you know, the church uses symbols, right? And signs and sacraments. We use oil and water and all these other things. Tangible signs.
So if anybody would like to purchase your book, Joyce, we can get Augustus Tolton on Amazon and Liturgical Press. And they can reach out to you at the Archdiocese at the new Chicago Catholic. I guess I'm dating myself by saying I remember the New World.
The New World, yeah.
But at the Chicago Catholic to book your presentation on Augustus Tolton as the COVID requirements or...
Yeah, I mean, Joyce, are you able, have you done any Zoom presentations to parishes and things? I understand that's kind of a thing now.
I'm supposed to do one at St. Benedict the African in Englewood.
Oh, beautiful.
I should start looking into that because that would be a good way to do it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful presentation.
Right.
Do not miss it. It is so well done. And I love all the pictures that you show that really it brings Augustus Tolton to life.
Yeah. And Joyce, your gift was just your book, rather, was such a gift to the church. And
I think
very providential that it was out before everything happened this past summer and that we had, you know. And I, again, kind of in the spirit of Augustus Tolton, he's not just a saint for the Black community. He's a saint for all of us, his example and his witness. So, Joyce DiRigo, thank you so much for being with us. And good luck with the book. And good luck with, I hope this, inspires parishes who may be listening to book you for a Zoom presentation so that you can continue to spread the good word.
Thank you, Tolton.
You're very welcome. God bless you, Joyce.
God bless, Joyce.
Bye-bye.
Here's good news about a great school with in-person instruction for your child. Father Anthony is asking you to send your children to St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy for in-person instruction. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy offers excellence by educating the mind, heart, and spirit of your child with faith, virtue, and honor. Cost should not be an obstacle to enrolling your child at St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. We have scholarships and financial aid available to fit all budgets. Anyone who wants to give their child a Catholic education can do so at St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is an elementary school offering grades pre-kindergarten through 8th grade and is located minutes from downtown Chicago, one block north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy. Call the school office at 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or visit ststanschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to The Winds of Change.
This Thursday, Father Anthony invites members of the 6th grade class of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, along with their teacher, Miss O'Reilly, to Winds of Change. Join us this Thursday at noon on AM 750 WNDZ.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change. Thank you for making us part of your Monday afternoon.
And Mary, I just wanted to tell you, I am so delighted to be here as a guest host with you because, as you know, when we first met, I often used to read your editorials on the Tribune's editorial page, and I thought to myself, when I grow up, I want to be just like Mary.
You're very sweet. Thank
you. You just write so well, and you truly express what it means to be an intelligent Catholic woman.
Well, that's very thankful.
On the issues. And the issues of the day sometimes aren't always the issues that people want to face, but you have written a beautiful article regarding the Mexico policy. So for our listeners who aren't familiar, what is the Mexico policy?
Right. So the Mexico City policy is something that it's a federal sort of like an appropriations bill that was it's named for the city in which this meeting was held in Mexico City that was initiated during the Reagan administration, which essentially cut off federal funds to agencies that refer or encourage abortion in foreign countries, including foreign countries in which abortion may be illegal or very much restricted. So it kept federal aid dollars from going to any organization that promoted or referred women for abortions. And so, some of those would be over, you know, Planned Parenthood International. Some of them also performed abortions. There's already a federal statute that prohibits money going directly for those surgeries, but it just adds to the coffers of abortion promoting agencies overseas.
So just to make it real clear, my tax dollars and yours are paying for abortions outside of the United States.
Correct.
And one of the first things that President Biden did when he started issuing the multitude of executive orders was to reinstate the Mexico City policy that had been canceled by President Trump. Is that correct?
Right. That's true. Yeah. President Trump. This is kind of like a political football that goes back and forth between every Republican administration since then has always kept the Mexico City policy as part of our international funding program that it should go to life-giving and programs that people really need. And then every Democrat president, including Clinton and Obama, and now, of course, Joe Biden, despite the fact that, you know, he professes the Catholic faith, have reenacted the Mexico City policy. Now, interestingly enough, the very deceptively named Catholics for a Free Choice, which is a pro-abortion organization, you know, that claims to be Catholic, I mean, they were very upset because, you know, normally Obama and Bill Clinton both did it on essentially day one. And I think Barack Obama did it one time on the day of the March for Life. He signed the Mexico City policy back in. So, you know, just a little extra slap in the face to pro-lifers. I think because Joe Biden, you know, again, does publicly state that he's Catholic and that the Catholic Church's teachings influence him. He didn't do it day one, which angered some of the abortion organizations. Catholic for Choice was quoted in the Washington Post as saying, you know, this should have been done day one, but we're glad that he's done it. And we see this, they said very tellingly, we see this as the floor, not the ceiling. Like, this is the minimum he needs to be doing for us. So, of course, we also saw this week as well, he's restored funding to Planned Parenthood under Title 10, which is supposed to be like a women's health and family planning program that doesn't involve using abortion as a form of contraception and, you know, family planning. So you're not planning much of a family if you're killing members of your family with the money. So oddly enough, this is interesting for us as Catholics because this does, for those of you listeners who kind of follow these things, this moves Biden, you know, from being sort of a person who simply said, I'm personally pro-life, but I understand that laws and I believe that laws need to be in place that keep it legal. That's not actually in order for you to incur penalties that would, for example, prohibit you from receiving the communion or participating in other sacraments in the church. You actually have to take an action. So bad thoughts, bad inclinations, bad viewpoints don't necessarily restrict you from, you know, full participation in the church, but actions do, especially when they are done in a very public way.
So signing an executive order?
Correct.
You think that would?
I do. And I'm sensing some sarcasm in your voice, Loretta. I don't mean, this is a very serious moral matter.
It is a very serious moment.
Yeah, so that moves him from, you know, sort of indirect remote cooperation, which is sort of the language of that moral theologians would use, to a more formal and material cooperation. And there's no one whose opinion I trust who works in that canon law and moral theology field who has said that Biden did not cross that line. They all believe he crossed that line. And so this puts him in a very, very different position now in terms of the whole communion issue, which is every time I watch these press conferences that Jen Psaki, his spokesperson, she keeps reminding anyone who asks a question about abortion is first reminded that Joe Biden is a devout Catholic.
Does go to Mass and carry a rosary so we can all see him carrying his rosary.
That's right. Yeah, it's very interesting. So it really does, you know, and the Bishop's Pro-Life Office along with the Justice and Peace Office together, which I thought was an excellent way to sort of handle the reprimand of the president. I'll just quote slightly from the statement here. It is grievous that one of President Biden's first official actions actively promotes the destruction of human life in developing nations. This is a violation of human dignity, and it is incompatible with Catholic teaching. So and then they go on to say, we and our brother bishops strongly oppose this action, and we urge the president to use his office for good. And if any of you, if you're near a computer, Google Culture of Life Africa. Our mutual friend, Loretta Nye's mutual friend, Uju Ekeocha, who was a Nigerian-born, now living in London, but activist on pro-life issues in Africa, put together an amazing video from people living in all sorts of different countries in Africa, from the French-speaking to the English-speaking, and from North to South Africa and every place in between the West Coast. Africans saying, do not send us money for abortion, Joe Biden. We need things like water, you know, and food.
Education.
And education for our girls.
Yes.
Exactly. And I mean, and everything that the reputable studies show is that when young girls, the longer they stay in school, obviously, the fewer children that they have. And no, you don't want 13 and 14-year-olds being married off to 30-year-old men and then, you know, having 12 children one after another. That's not good for them. But the longer, if they are given an opportunity, first of all, to be surrounded with things that promote good health, clean water, food, appropriate shelter. And then from there, that we really respect the dignity of women as people that God has gifted with brains, and we educate them. They are not just, you know, there.
Right.
And the longer, again, if girls even stay in school, say up through the end of high school,
right,
and then are able to choose a husband, you know, freely, that lifts all, you know, they say the high tide raises all boats. That raises all the boats, right?
Right.
And you come up with a solution that is not the quick, cheap fix of abortion. And what was really beautiful, again, go to cultureoflife.org, I think, Uju Ekeocha. Just, it's really worth the 4 or 5 minutes of your time to watch this. Lord, have you had a chance to see it?
I have not seen it yet. But, you know, what I found so interesting in your article, Mary, was that in some African nations, they don't even have a word for abortion.
Right.
I mean, that tells you it's not part of their dynamic. It's not part of their culture. It's not part of their life. They are not
looking for it. It's unthinkable to them.
It is because it is the absolute opposite of how much they respect life.
Yeah.
And that's what, you know, she says. But, you know, Mary, where can we go and read your article? Because it's so well done.
Oh, thank you. So if you go to National Catholic Register, there's two Catholic papers that use that NCR acronym. You want to go to the National Catholic Register and just Google my name, Mary Fiorito, and the article will come up.
Worth it, and well done, Mary.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Loretta, for asking me about it. Well, listeners, a joy as ever. This hour just flies by so much when you're having fun. We ask that God bless you this week,
Amen.
Especially through the intercession of Venerable Augustus Tolton,
Amen.
Sister Josephine Bakita, whose feast day it is today, another great African saint. And we'll be back with you next week. Goodbye, and God bless you.
God bless you.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the way? The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed.